Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
You're currently listening to the free version of Let Me Talk.
If you want longer, ad-free episodes, even earlier, head to lmtpod.com to find out how to subscribe.
Let me talk! Let me talk! Let me talk! Let me talk!
Let me talk! One, two, three!
Well, City got out of Anfield with a point, and I'm absolutely full to the brim of all those hands that I've bitten off as a result. A bit of a paradox of a game, really. City bad, but ruining missed chances to win the game, and Liverpool only scored because of a gift of a penalty. But it was Liverpool who looked the more likely to score throughout the second half, despite City hitting the post and the bar. Who do we reckon the point means more for at this stage? This is Let Me Talk. I'm David Mooney. With me is the Athletic City correspondent, Sam Lee. Hello, Sam.
Hello. Yeah, and in keeping with the up and down nature of the entire game, since full time, I've had a large coffee and two night nurse. So try and keep track of that.
This could be my earliest Simpsons reference of a podcast yet, but that's Homer with the pet pills and the sleeping pills when he's driving the truck, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly that. I'm not sure what mood I'm going for. But I mean, I do feel like it is in keeping with the game, like, because I wrote an article for The Athletic about it, which I think people aren't going to get their heads around, possibly because it's shit, but possibly because these things always have to be, oh, they were good at this or they were shit at this, but it was just like, they were just a bit of both. And like, some players could be great in one moment, and like Rodri and Stones and Akanji, Edison, they have to be so brave to just hold on to the ball as much as possible, wait until they're pressed by like two people, and then pass to somebody else in space. You've got to be so brave to do that. And they were so good at those things. And obviously, Ake gives away the penalty, and then you think, City were getting battered after that. His head's going to be spinning. Salah's on. It's going to be a nightmare. But then he was fine. Like, people, you can have ups and downs, and the good thing about a draw is you can kind of reflect on matches without it being one thing or the other. I'm glad we don't have to have the 4 points behind or 2 points clear with 30 points to play for.
Yeah, there's no inquest either, yeah.
A bit more nuanced. There's no inquest, but it kind of brings us to the overall thing and talk of hands being snapped off. It's like, where do you draw the line for the expectation? I was speaking to a mate earlier in the week and talking about being delighted with a draw, etc. And I was like, yeah, unless Liverpool score at the end. Because obviously it's a different context then, isn't it? Like, if you're winning 1-0 or even 2-0 and then Liverpool equalise right at the end, then you're not happy with that draw that you were pre-match. But then, even this morning, I was like, well, City aren't going to win because it's Anfield. But then when I saw the team, the Liverpool team, I was like, well, they've got to, really.
Mm.
So then...
And then at half-time as well.
You think, well, yeah. But then at half-time, you think, well, Liverpool aren't going to not score, are they? City need to...
Take one of these chances, please.
I didn't think they were particularly bad. Yeah, exactly. Or like the chances to create a chance, as we always talk about. It's like, so I think on a global perspective, I'd have to say that despite the lineup, despite everything else, you'd just be pleased with a blanket like approach to Anfield. You get a point. Thanks very much. You've not lost. You go home and you go again. But the bigger question is, why were they so rattled by probably what is the weakest Liverpool team they've ever played? At Anfield, I don't know.
Hmm.
What does it mean for the rest of the title race? In terms of controlling matches and taking chances, and I'm not going to say they didn't stand up in clutch moments, because like I said at the start, at times they did and at times they didn't. Like, it was an incredibly difficult match to play. they didn't play it in a manner that controlled the match. But then again, when they equalise and you think, they're just going to score two or three here, and then, you know, Guardiola makes the changes and it calms down a bit, and obviously City could have nicked it at the end, but there's no point in thinking, oh, what if Doku had, you know, if Doku shot have just gone in the post, because Diaz had already missed two great chances by then. So,
yeah,
like, it is what it is. So take all that out of the equation, you just think, we don't know too much more about this City team than we did already. They're still really good, but they're not up to the very best level, and we don't know if that's going to be enough.
Yeah, let me read this from Yogeshwar, who got in touch to say, writing immediately after full time, and while there'll be a lot who say we've been shite and whatnot, and I agree, we've been shite, is this perhaps also a sign that when we have bad days, when players like Rodri and Alvarez and Bernardo have bad days, we can still go to any place in the world and get a result?
I'm going to do the Pep thing and pull him up on a minor comment and say, don't put Alvarez in the same bracket as Bernardo and Rodri.
I knew you were going to do that.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I like that. I like that way of looking at it. Again, I feel like, again, on that kind of global perspective, like I did at the end of the game at the Etihad, like, I feel like this is 75% of the quality of the peak Liverpool and City performances. I don't think either team, it's not controversial to say it at all, is it? I don't think either team were as strong as they have been in the past. Obviously, City should have won at the Etihad. Liverpool probably should have won at Anfield, although obviously you could argue either way. So fair enough. But like I say, like I genuinely... So City weren't good at certain moments. There was no control whatsoever. It looked like a goal was just coming. But like I say, they could... I mentioned it early on, I mentioned it early on in this podcast, but like, to go and hold the ball in the centre of the pitch, which is the centre of the pitch they kind of wanted to avoid in the early Pep seasons, but now it's like, no, we've got the players to go in there and hold on to it, and knowing that if you lose it in there, you're probably going to concede, or they've at the very least got a huge chance running directly at goal, and that, you know, that's not nothing. That's what I'm trying to get to in the article. Like, it's... That is, you know, if there's bravery on a football pitch, apart from, like, you know, trying to head away something that other people are kicking away, like, that is bravery. Like, doing it there and doing it at Anfield, that is brave. And, like, the margins are so small. Like, those two Diaz chances was Alvarez losing the ball. Like, everything's just got to be perfect. And, like, Ake, I can't imagine we'll get through this podcast without referencing the Gordon Ramsay meme again, because obviously there's Alvarez. But like with Ake, it's like, that is so fucking stupid.
Mm.
It's the last thing you need to do there. Because they were, you know, they won a throw-in after like 8 minutes and they were going mental. So do not give them a penalty.
Mm. But it's the last thing you need to do in that position. And he's the last player you'd expect that from as well.
Exactly. But it's credit in the bank, isn't it, really? And it's like, well, I don't know what you put that down to. Like, is that just the Anfield factor? I guess that's the easiest thing to do, isn't it? Did Edison have to react to it like he did?
Yeah, let's just touch on that, because I do think the mistake is Ake's, but he has an accomplice in Edison there. Just don't swing your foot. Like even if you take the backswing, just pull out of it, because once Nunes has got that touch, the finish from there is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, especially for him. Although he normally scores the harder ones, doesn't he? Mm. Yeah, like it didn't really have to be that way, did it? And then he injured himself, and, you know, Guardiola. Were we talking the other day about Guardiola making noises in press conferences that are very hard to transcribe?
Mm.
He was asked about it. He was like, "I get the feeling that it's," mm-mm. And like, that was it. But like, it was a kind of negative. Mm-mm. Like, but what does that mean?
Yeah,
like, has he strained knee ligaments? Is he gonna, you know, has he just got like a massively bruised shin that will keep him out of the Newcastle game? Either way, though, Ortega's the fucking man. Fair play to him. Like, we've said this before, but I've no issues with Ortega coming in, any whatsoever. And that was rubber stamp today.
Yeah.
Because he was big when he came on.
I was going to come to this later, but we had a message from Benjamin who said, after Ortega and Edison's respective performances at Anfield, do you think at any point Ortega will be the first choice?
No, I think he'll just go. Like, there's been report. We've said this for a long time because it just seems obvious. Even with that information, it just seems obvious. that, you know, teams are going to want him, and why would he stay unless he's just happy to be, you know, the role he is now. But if, no,
what if Edison's out for a while?
I don't know what kind of, I don't know if, yeah, well, exactly. If Edison's out for a while and he finishes the season, you know, I've said already that at the end of last season, you know, Edison kind of turned it around. Otherwise, Guardiola would have gone into this season thinking maybe Ortega could be the one. So let's say Edison misses, I was going to say a month, but there's international break anyway. But a few games, to the extent that Ortega does really well and then stays in, then yeah, maybe it changes. But no, I think broadly speaking, unless that happens, he'll just go before we ever get that chance. But if he were to stay long enough, it wouldn't be impossible to see it. But look, we've talked about Edison being like one of the fundamental and best signings of Guardiola's reign. So we can't now start saying, oh, actually, he should be out of the team, because he is really important. You know, we talk about the odd mistake. It just happens to be that today we're discussing one that happened in the match. And that is one thing that, you know, when he races out, you just think, a lot of the time, you just think, oh, God. And that's obviously never going to change now, because it's 7 or 8 years down the line. But yeah, unfortunately, I don't see Ortega ever being at City long enough to be the proper number one. But I'm under no illusions, really, that he could be. Mm. I think he absolutely could.
Yeah. Well, we've kind of meandered away from the game itself. So let's go back to that, because in terms of an overall performance and an overall start, something you said on X, formerly Twitter, caught my eye. Maybe Kyle Walker turning them round at the start did actually have an effect. That, like, you know, in that way that we always go, well, that can't possibly have an effect. In the whole, you know, the City attacked the South Stand at the wrong time sort of thing. Well, it surely doesn't matter. And so I had a quick look. City turned Liverpool around in 17-18, lost 4-3, and they turned them around in 21-22, drew 2-2, and then obviously turned them around today.
Yeah, well, I mean, if, and not everybody does, but if we or you or whoever accepts that kicking towards a cop is an advantage for Liverpool in the second half, then maybe Diaz didn't score because he wasn't kicking towards a cop. Mm. Like, it's not a serious thought that that came to me on the way home. But
he did say, didn't he, in the build-up, like, Walker, that he'd do that if he won the toss.
He said. Yeah, he did. And I think that's probably why there was more... not that there's been a massive focus, but more focus on it than normal. But at the same time, I don't know. Because, again, if we're saying that Liverpool deserve to win, then the ends they were kicking at, and generally speaking, it doesn't make a fucking difference anyway, doesn't it? Does it? But the end they were kicking towards, it didn't really slow their momentum, did it? But again, it was, like I say, it's just a funny... Like you said at the start, it's a funny game to analyse, because for all that Liverpool probably deserved to win and created chances... That was the only goal they did score was the gift. And McAllister did really well after the long delay to take that pen and score it. But beyond that, all their... As much as they were, like, created the atmosphere, and Guardiola said it's like a tsunami when you play there, that was created by City in the penalty as well, wasn't it? Mm. So it's difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of the massive blow your own foot off moments when you think of how the game had been going in the first half and the atmosphere in the ground. City, I thought, settled the quicker, and there was a good three or four chances, if not chances, then as you say, chances to create chances. They kept finding that space on the inside channels, and De Bruyne kept kind of picking up that loose ball. All stemming from Rodri and Stones stepping into the middle, being really brave, and all that sort of stuff. I'm wondering though, Sam, does this game stack up to another one of those examples where that City have had all season long, where they have controlled it in parts, but they just can't help but lose control of it themselves?
Well, that was it, because obviously, like, we talked about it in the preview. I did an article about the thousand passes, and at half time I was speaking to somebody about it, and he was like, this is too direct for what Pep wants. And I was like, but even when they started well, they were going direct then, and I was like, that must be the plan. Like, it must be the plan. I mean, not, you know, 15 minutes to 45, because there was no control then and they were losing it easier, but like, the first 15 minutes was probably the best City play. Well, it was the best City played. Liverpool, for a start, when they were playing out, they just couldn't get into their midfielders at all. It was just goalkeeper, defender, hit it long, and then it was just whether Akanji or Ake could win the aerial ball, and normally City did that. And then they just went down the other end and attacked for exactly the same reason that Guardiola does not play long balls, because it just comes back at you. But they also, for the first few minutes, 5 minutes in fact, that somebody would hold on to it, Akanji would hold on to it, give it to Rodri, give it back to Akanji. He'd turn it into Walker, or he'd find De Bruyne the first time. De Bruyne would find Foden. Gomez would come in with Foden, who was playing left back, and then vacate that left back spot, and De Bruyne would just run into it, and you think, are they just going to do this for as long as they can possibly get away with it? And that generated some really dangerous scenarios for City, and they were able to create it on the left side as well. And I just think this is a fantastic start. I tweeted at some point during the first half, it's not so much 1,000 passes, but it is like 1,000 touches. Like they are doing that stuff. They are making enough touches to draw Liverpool in, and then once they're out of position, because you've just got to press, because what are you going to do, to stand and watch them, which you could do, but Liverpool are just, they're going to do that, aren't they? They're going to press. Once they've done that, you've got that space to attack into. So it was like, that must be the game plan. But Guardiola said at the end, they were able to have the extra pass when Kovacic came on. And he goes, and that's what we wanted. We talked about that. That's what we wanted. But for different reasons, mainly because Liverpool are so good at counter-pressing, it isn't what they got. But I still feel like even before it kind of unravelled slightly, and they didn't have anywhere near as much control as they'd have wanted for the last half hour of the first half, they were playing a more direct game regardless. Like they did 2 seasons ago at the start of the 2-2. It just felt like they were very good at making that space, and then they were going to exploit it. Like, I don't know how they would do that so frequently without Guardiola saying, let's do this today.
Mm.
But then after that, like you say, they weren't able to keep a lid on it at all. But still managed pretty well. I thought by half time, even though the control wasn't there, I still thought it was a good performance, really.
I thought they were on top at half time, yeah.
Yeah, but they were on top, but it was like, well, Liverpool are obviously going to score, and I'm not sure City will again. And that is how it panned out, but only because of the big head loss at the start of the half.
Coming up after a short ad break, there'll be a bit more about the performance at Liverpool. Talking about control, we'll be talking about Alvarez playing on the wing, and we'll be discussing Erling Haaland's performance as well. See you shortly.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Let Me Talk is sponsored by you, the listeners.
The best way to support the podcast is by subscribing via Memberful.
You can pay as little as £2 per month, which gives you early access to all our podcasts ad-free, and they're packed with even more content.
That gives you even more minutes of us to fill up your week.
Subscribing is really easy, and the longer episodes will integrate seamlessly with your podcast app of choice, be it Spotify or Apple. Head over to lmtpod.com for more information on signing up and links to all of our socials. How much of that head loss is the contributing factor to Liverpool being dominant in the second half? If City get through that first 10 minutes and just do that 1,000 passes thing again, and like there's just no chances.
I wonder if the second half pans out like in a much more controlled manner. I wonder if it's that, because I mean Guardiola used the word tsunami, you said, in the post match. Stones was asked on Sky what it was like when the atmosphere turns inside Anfield and Liverpool get the tails up, and he basically said it's like when we do it. It's just the opposite of that, and. I just kind of wonder if they'd managed it for that next 10 minutes or so, if actually they'd have just cruised their way through to, I mean, it might have still finished 1-1, but it would have felt much more controlled 1-1 or something. I don't know if there's anything to be read into that they've also, I mean, look at the record against the rest of the top six. It's this season, it is not good. They're all teams that can take control. Yeah,
that's one of the things I was thinking of on the way back as well. If we're talking bigger picture, if we're talking about what does this all mean, you look at it and you go, you know, in all the talk about being happy with a port at Anfield, which, you know, I will understand until the day I die, I have no problem with that, you then do look at it and you go, they haven't beaten a good team all season. Why is that? But like, it's different reasons, isn't it? Like, some of them is simply because Rodri wasn't playing, or Rodri, in the case of Chelsea away, played badly. The Spurs game, they were much better, but conceded stupid goals and missed big chances.
Massive deflection at Arsenal, exactly.
But again, that was kind of falls under the Rodri umbrella. There's just different reasons, but then you think, well, the thing is, I don't know why I think this. Probably because City didn't win, I guess. And I've seen a bit of it on Twitter since I got home. But I've started to feel like, well, like what would I be saying, or what would I write if they don't win the league this year? Like, there's no, at this as it stands, there's no big inquest, is there? But you just look at it and you go, well, they've missed Gundogan. The window didn't go their way, and that's probably been the difference in a few games this season. That ability to control matches, and you know, the window in terms of taking them a step back. So far, it hasn't clicked in. But look, this time last year, we wouldn't have been talking about Trevor, would we? We'd have been talking about what they're going to do.
Why is it not the same kind of thing?
And it might be irrelevant. But as it stands, you kind of feel like just maybe the psychology of there being two other teams in it. You just think, which way is it going to go? But then again, Arsenal have got a tough run in. Liverpool's doesn't look that easy. Liverpool's is probably the easiest of the three, but there's still some difficult games in there. And again, like, I don't know, is it sustainable, Liverpool's run? Like, they've not been the best team. They've not been the best, most solid team over the season. Obviously, it's a high bar, because I don't think you'd say City have been either, but City have still been excellent. But you'd think Arsenal are probably more stable. But then even they had the rough period, so they were pretty evenly matched, really. I don't think any team is going to win all of their games. I don't know how it's going to go.
Yeah, and we've been talking about like the three-way title race being a different dynamic, and I actually think the more I sit down and think of it now, I think that's helped City this season. I really do, because all those things we've mentioned, you know, they missed De Bruyne for so long of this season, and they didn't have that creative spark. They went on that mad run before Christmas. It was something like only 2 wins in 11 games sort of thing. There was a real bad run. They haven't beaten a side in the top six, and yet look at where they are in the table, and look how close things are at the top of the table. The fact that they've got two teams there that are taking points off everybody else at about the same rate kind of says that, you know, the dynamics possibly keeping City in the hunt this year.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, that Arsenal game is going to be massive, isn't it? At the end of the month, really big. I mean, I suppose just to completely change the subject, I'm not sure if that's exactly welcome. But if we're doing other big picture topics, after De Bruyne's magnificent return, I'm not sure those levels have been maintained. Like the Chelsea game, it wasn't terrible, but you think, well, he was getting in crossing positions and they weren't reaching the target. Fair enough. But today, when I saw two players were coming on, I was like, would he take De Bruyne off? And then we would have done this conversation after the 2-2 draw 2 seasons ago, when De Bruyne wasn't playing well then. But it was basically the same reason that Haaland surely stays on all the time. And it's that, well, he's not playing well, but if he gets the ball in a position to do something, I'll trust him to do it.
Lo and behold,
but
he's equalised.
2 years down the line. Yeah, and obviously he did. But 2 years down the line, obviously that wasn't the case in Guardiola's thinking. But there was a moment just before he got taken off, and it was City again. To be fair, eye of the storm. They took a short goal kick. They played it around. They got it into Rodri, and he spun it around the corner for De Bruyne to kind of run onto, transition like. And Endo just went nope, and just like eased him off it. And you just think it's a different, you know, it's different for De Bruyne now. It's tougher. And we wonder what kind of level he's at. You know, because obviously he came back and he was magnificent. But maybe there's more ups and downs now. Maybe I'm just looking at a poor performance at Anfield, which happens to, you know, the best players, and overanalyzing it a bit. But that's an interesting question as well.
Yeah.
You know, especially with Guardiola thinking, well, you know what, we could take him off. But to be fair, it needed Kovacic coming on. And once Kovacic came on,
they had 10 minutes, didn't they, where everything was fine again. Kovacic got his foot on the ball, and Liverpool suddenly couldn't transition as easily as they could before.
Mm. But it's one of those where it's like you can praise the substitutions for doing it, but also it's one of those that highlights the selection in the first place was probably wrong.
Mm.
You know, putting Alvarez on the left, again, mitigating circumstances for Alvarez. We said, you know, the amount of times people are like, oh, well, why is he playing in the middle instead of Foden? Like, why doesn't he play out wide? And I've always said, like, they don't see him as a wide player. Firstly, there's your evidence, but it is Anfield. But secondly, they don't see him as a wide player. Why the fuck are they doing it now? But when I saw him there, I was like,
Anfield.
Well, he's just, yeah, exactly. But he's just going to be, like, that's just going to be a runner's role, isn't it? That's going to be a track your man back, put the effort in, and I'll try and make the difference. But my God, he was so bad. Like, just like, again, like in the first half when things were far from terrible, but you know, it was getting towards half time, City putting a move together, and he just got the ball on the cut. That was second half with Walker, but it was the same kind of thing, and he just kind of didn't look and just gave it away. And it's like, mate, you must realise the game you're playing and the game you have to play and where you are. And there was another one, like, Rodri was, like, caught under a high ball and he was backpedalling. And those headers, normally, like, they're so difficult because you can't generate any power in them. And it's difficult to direct them somewhere. You're normally just nodding it down. And if the opposition midfielder is smart and knows where that's going to go, which most of them do in the Premier League, they just mop it up. But Rodri was backpedalling, managed to head it to Alvarez, and you think, great, this is one of those, you know, when like the ball's bouncing in a dangerous situation, they just pop it to one of them, the other one pops it back, and City have just got the ball again. And Alvarez will like, just head it back towards the centre backs then, and he heads it forward and loses it. It's like, mate, will you stop doing this? And you know, when we talk about like it's the quality of the players and the characteristics of the players, I asked Guardiola about the 1,000 touches thing last week, and he mentioned, you know, it's the quality of the players. And in fact, we did talk about this because he mentioned Grealish against Doku, but again, like, Alvarez is another example of that, and it's fine because a lot of the stuff he does bring, like we saw at the start of the season in particular, the goals and the attacking spark and that does exist, that is there, that is not a bad thing. But in certain moments you don't need that. In certain moments you just need to keep the ball, and he was incapable of doing it completely. And that is another one of those differences where you do need more spark sometimes than what Grealish gives you if Grealish isn't playing well. But even if Grealish is playing shit, as long as he's not... If Grealish had to play today and created nothing but had never given the ball away, they'd have been better off.
Mm.
Just keep the ball.
It's about territory, though, away so it? That's it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, Grealish, when he played against Liverpool earlier in the season, I think he got dribbled up to the corner of the box, turned around and passed it directly to one of the Liverpool midfielders to counter-attack. So, like, he's not had a good season, Grealish. And like everyone, including me, everyone who's saying, oh, you know, they need Grealish back if they want to win the league and be at their best, they need him back, and they need him to play well because he's not been this season. But that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the differences in the players. And like that lineup against Chelsea, when ahead of Rodri, it was De Bruyne, Foden, Alvarez, Haaland and Doku.
Mm-hmm.
They're all great players, but there's not the right balance there. They're too direct because they're all trying to do that. Like, Foden's getting a bit better at it, but they're all just going, okay, let's head it forward. No, don't head it forward. Head it back to the fucking centre-backs. Keep the ball, mate. Keep the ball. He was very bad. And also, I think, like, social media-wise, it's a similar Mahrez missing a penalty at Anfield vibe. Like, people, I still think the reaction to Alvarez recently is over the top, considering the contribution he made earlier in the season when De Bruyne wasn't there and also when Haaland wasn't there. I still feel it's like people who are saying, you know, it doesn't work in midfield and it's never worked. Well, it has done, but it doesn't work quite so well when, you know, De Bruyne is already there. So I think that's overblown, but like it's gonna be difficult for him to, in terms of public opinion. I don't know about him mentally, he might be fine, but people are going to hold that performance against him for a long time, I think.
I had Kittens.
He was shocking.
I had Kittens when he gave it away on the edge of the box.
Oh, that as well. Yeah. Yeah. Really bad. Really bad. Again, at half time, you know, people say, why didn't he come off at half time? You know, Guardiola obviously must have seen that. But again, like at half time, it wasn't terrible, was it? It was still like, don't, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of mode, I would have said. I mean, he was obviously playing badly, and I talked about it at the time, I tweeted it at the time. But you know what he's like, don't make a change if you don't have to. But obviously by the time he did need to make the change, it was in a million pieces on the floor.
Yeah.
And at half time he was probably thinking, I'm not going to change this too much, because I don't want like one big, you know, I don't want something to change the flow of the match completely, and lo and behold, they did it regardless.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been a long time since I can remember City's motto being, if it's not broken, break it, but there we are. Just while we're on Alvarez, Sam, Cole Mulvenor has been in touch to say, this might go against the Alvarez hate campaign that is going on, which I understand because he gives the ball away quite a lot and didn't offer much defensively. But is anyone else surprised Pep hasn't gone with a false nine with Alvarez instead of Haaland in the big away games? Sort of what we used to see when we had Aguero and Jesus. Obviously, I get the value of Haaland, but I feel we would benefit so much more with the extra man dropping in as opposed to stepping up, especially in games like this. I haven't looked at his record, but it must be pretty poor, especially for his standards in big away games.
Well, the thing is, I don't even consider this as a subject now, because it was like through last season when I just thought, we've said this before as well, like Guardiola would obviously routinely take Aguero out of the team if he felt he needed a false nine. He's not doing that with Haaland.
Yeah.
And he would never do it last season. And obviously like that De Bruyne at Anfield logic from 2 years ago of, well, I'm going to leave him on because he might not have had a touch yet and he might not have contributed much, but if we get a chance, I want him to take it. I feel like that's been the case in countless games since Haaland signed. And I can't remember too many. I suppose that's not true, actually, because I can immediately remember Everton and Brentford in the last month. But I can't remember too many where he has been able to change the game just by being on. But it's just kind of accepted now, in my head anyway, that Guardiola's just going to keep him on. And I feel like that was the case at Anfield. You know, if a chance comes his way, he's going to score it.
Bournemouth was the only one he didn't do that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, so fair enough. But I just feel like, I just feel like it's a non-subject. Guardiola's just going to do that. But again, that was the subject last season, you know, this time last year when we were saying, how did they get that balance back? And obviously in the end it was Stones. The other alternative was just not to play Haaland, but that was never going to be the case, was it? Guardiola's like, well, no, we're going to play this guy, we're going to adapt to him, and you obviously see why. But again, like, he wasn't up to much today. But and it kind of ties into a wider thing. Like, I just feel like the amount of tackles that Liverpool won, they put in some monster tackles. And it was one of those games when, through no fault of City's own, the ball would just bounce to them. And that's not me going, oh, you know, they got all about it. It just happened today. Like Doku when he hit the post. How was that going back into the goalkeeper's arms? There was two I can think of. There was like, oh, was it Diaz in the first? Yes, it was. Diaz in the first half, he had a shot from outside the box and it went just wide. But that was after some sort of lucky bounce. And it was like, well, how's he still got it? And then after the game, Klopp was talking about like the spirit of his team. And he was honestly, some of the best moments of my coaching career has been the fact that we've been able to play so well against City, because obviously he knows City are so good.
Mm.
And he used Diaz's run
with
as
Walker
an example,
and
when he was against Walker and Rodri. And he was like, Walker is like officially the fastest player in the Premier League. He was like, I think that was proven, et cetera, et cetera. He goes, and Rodri, we all know how good Rodri is. And Diaz kept going, he kept getting it. I was like, yeah, that's because every time Rodri took it off him, Walker fucking kept giving it him back. But it was just one of those days when some of the tackles Liverpool made in midfield in particular, they weren't even going out for throw-ins. They were just keeping the ball. They were fantastic. City didn't really match that, I don't think. There were some lucky bounces that they got, and that just happens. And obviously in some, you know, in a lot of ways you can make your own luck in terms of those second balls. But I just feel like Haaland, you know, Nunes was being offside so much. Like, he's just a loose cannon, isn't he? But like, he was given, you know, when they did only have a long ball for the first 15 minutes, it was making it difficult for Akanji and Ake, and he does make life difficult. But Haaland, I didn't feel like Haaland was making life difficult for Quansah or Van Dijk today. I just felt like there were times when he could have just been in some kind of duel, like a shoulder-to-shoulder, backing in. He just didn't seem like he was there. Didn't seem like he fancied it, which is obviously not the case, but I just thought he was a bit soft today. And like Liverpool were not soft at all.
That's it for the free version of Let Me Talk. There is more for members, though. Go to lmtpod.com if you want to sign up for those longer and ad-free episodes. Sam, what is in the post-Liverpool podcast for members?
Yeah, Akanji starting over Diaz. The whole this means more scenario. Stones' goal, you know, the actual goal that they scored. De Bruyne and Pep, you know, the big talking point from the game. And Foden and the passing of the torch from De Bruyne.
That's all for members. Those ad-free episodes are longer and they're out earlier. You can find out more on lmtpod.com.
If you want to send us an email, it's hello@lmtpod.com. We're also on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok, so just search for LMTpod on there.
Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.